This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Adam Hochberg is a name familiar to many NPR listeners. His stories have run on All Things Considered and Morning Edition. But students of UNC Chapel Hill refer to him as Professor Hochberg. He teaches a course on making radio. The class puts together The Carolina Connection. It's a radio news show that runs on WCHL on Saturday mornings at 8:30. And Adam Hochberg is with me here, along with a few of his students, Kirsten Chang and Mike Rodriguez. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So, Adam, what's the goal? Are you trying to make radio journalists more of them in the world?
Well, yeah, that's not a bad goal, is it? We teach a practicum class. I tell students that this will be probably the most unusual class they take at UNC, because they walk in, we have no lectures, we have no exams, we have no tests. It's even sometimes a struggle to grade them. Because what we do is we produce a half-hour weekly radio show every week that runs on WCHL, and we also provide audio content to any other radio station in North Carolina that wants it. And the idea is to produce radio journalism about important issues, about things that young people are experiencing in their lives. I like the show to have sort of a youthful vibe. I'm not trying to get them to imitate All Things Considered or Morning Edition or the CBS Evening News, for that matter. I'm trying to break some new ground with them and hear about what's important to young people, and also explore some ways to tell stories that might be different, maybe ways that young people will respond to more.
And Kirsten, you have been with the program for a while now. Is that right? And so tell us about your role, because I know you're doing spot news now, right?
That's true.
And tell us about that, your attraction, because those are those short pieces about really newsy items that are in the headlines, may have a short shelf life, but they're important at the moment, right?
They are. I would say that I don't actually like doing spot news, but I've been forced to because we're senior members, we're producers, we kind of have to take those on. Sometimes we'll come in on Friday. You know, our show goes on Saturday morning, and Friday, half the show will have to be spot news, so we produce that day. You know, we come in, we don't know what we're going to do, but it comes together.
And how is that different for you from producing, say, feature pieces?
Features, you know, you have a week and a half to put it together. Spot news, sometimes you come in the morning and you don't know what you're going to have. You have an afternoon to do it. So you just have to stay flexible. You have to stay on top of it and just be open to what's going to happen.
And be able to talk to people who are in the news. You talked to State Senator David Curtis, a Republican from Lincoln County, and he talked with you about a bill he sponsored to abolish gender-neutral housing in the state. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
I've got a concern that the UNC system is getting away from its core values, and I think that they may be getting going down the wrong path and are concerned about some other issues that they really don't need to be concerned about.
David Curtis, concerned about boys and girls mixing on campus, and telling you about that, Kirsten. Tell us what it's like talking to a state lawmaker about what should have been a serious public policy issue, serious in his mind, clearly.
Mm-hmm. I was actually lucky to get to talk to him. I'd never been to the state legislature before. And the day before, you know, Adam and everyone was like prepping me for going in there and having to like fight off other reporters and track him down and like run him down in the hallway. But what I did was I got there really early in the morning and I caught him outside his office and just happened to talk to him for a few minutes. And he was very inviting. He spoke to me for a few minutes, and we actually ended up using that audio and like giving it to other radio stations. So I was lucky to get to talk to him about that.
Did he take you seriously at first? I mean, he doesn't know you. You're not part of the State House press corps, for instance.
It's true. He asked me where I was from, and I said, I'm with WCHL, because that's where we air. And I could see in his mind, he kind of looked at me, and he was thinking. I could see the gears turning, and he's like, okay, I have a few minutes. So
that's
he did
great.
Take me seriously.
So you're learning how a bill becomes law, how an idea becomes a story in radio. We're going to play another piece here right quick. This is based on a 2010 Pew study that found that 10% of adults aged 18 to 29 don't have cell phones. This is a very small segment of that population. So who are these people? Mike Rodriguez looked into it.
Depending on when you call, it might take some time before Senior Communications Major Amy Jackson finds out you want to talk to her. That message was recorded on her answering machine at home. Yes, her answering machine. She's one of only 7% of adults age 18 to 29 who don't have cell phones. She lost hers in a river near her parents' house in western North Carolina.
And it was just so quick that I just didn't have a phone anymore.
but it didn't take long before she realized she had more free time without a smartphone. She no longer was constantly disturbed by a phone ringing in her pocket, and she didn't waste a lot of time each day sending texts to friends. And that's why 16 months later, she still doesn't have a cell phone.
I had so much freedom to just spend my time with my friends until the activity just ran into an endpoint. The end of the hanging out and everything was, you know, pretty fulfilling.
And her boyfriend Carl Becker hesitated to admit it was a good thing she doesn't have a cell phone.
I mean, I don't have to worry about, like, texting her. I mean, texting is very ambiguous, and some guys say that women are hard to understand to begin with. So I guess deciphering their texts can be difficult.
But is not having a cell phone really that easy? Walking around campus, you can see it doesn't only dominate our imagination, it dominates campus life. Students answer their phones all around campus, and going 16 months, much less 16 minutes, without their cell phone is out of the question.
My name is Jordan Druga. I'm a freshman, and I'm a biology-psychology double major.
How long do you think you can live without a cell phone?
Like 10 minutes.
And she's not the only one. Freshman business major Shane Gronkin says he can last 12 hours until he wouldn't know what's going on around him.
I couldn't do my schoolwork. I couldn't check my email, Twitter. I couldn't know what's going on in the news.
But the constant buzz of campus life disappears at Jackson's house. Not having a cell phone helps her get away from people, but it can also keep her away. Though most of the time she enjoys her phone that's wired into the wall of her kitchen, she concedes that it has its limitations.
People don't have an awareness of my existence because they can't text me. I'm not in their text inbox. And nothing reminds them to talk to me anymore.
But don't expect to text Jackson anytime soon. For now, the only ringtones she'll be hearing on campus are from other cell phones. In Chapel Hill, I'm Mike Rodriguez.
And Mike Rodriguez is with us. That piece aired on the Carolina Connection on WCHL. Students of Adam Hochberg. Adam is here as well. Mike, tell us why you did that piece.
Well, it was interesting. We were in our pitch meeting, and, you know, you look around, everybody has their phone on their desk. And, you know, some of them actually weren't smartphones. And we were talking about, like, you know, why don't you have, you know, iPhone or Android? And then all of a sudden it was like, that's kind of interesting. And then somebody in our class actually knew somebody who didn't have a cell phone, and we're like, this is very, very rare among, you know, the student population. So I decided to, you know, take on the story, and I met her and interviewed her.
Man bites dog. Very good. So we're going to come back and talk with more of Adam's students about his program that he does with budding journalists at the University of North Carolina. That'll happen on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Today we're talking to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill students who put together the radio show The Carolina Connection. It airs weekly on WCHL. Adam Hochberg is the instructor of their course. Kirsten Chang and Mike Rodriguez both work on the show. We've heard from them. And we want to introduce two new student reporters, Mark Haywood and James Kaminsky. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks so much.
Mark, you produced a rather astonishing piece about human trafficking, which we tend to think of as happening in far-flung exotic corners of the world. You stumbled on a story that is here, right here in Randolph County. Tell us how you found out about it.
Well, Adam had challenged us a couple of weeks back to start, you know, digging deep and kind of doing more investigative pieces. And there happened to be just an awareness week for trafficking at UNC, and I thought that was interesting, did a little research, and found out that North Carolina ranks, the FBI ranks North Carolina among the top 10 states for trafficking. And that kind of just blew my mind. And then I found out there was this girl right in my hometown, you know, right there in Randolph County that had been trafficked. And I was able to get access through my aunt who tutors her, and she was willing to share her story.
Let's listen to it.
18-year-old Noemi Pasquale is a runner.
You're running down this other side. You're slapping hands with whomever's down there.
At her Ashboro High School track practice, she runs for sport. She competes in the 4x800 relay and runs cross country.
It feels amazing. It's like my world.
Pasquale may seem like a typical high schooler now, but just 3 years ago, she was living as a modern-day slave in Randolph County. She was living with a man who raped her and forced her to work without pay or proper schooling.
I prayed to God, make me strong, to show me the way how I'm going to get out of it.
In the past, Pasquale ran to escape bad situations. Growing up in the mountains of Guatemala, she says it was from her abusive Mayan family.
I ran away from them. Sometimes I would like go sleep outside or climb in the tree. And yeah, that was the way I survived.
She says she lived in a small house with her aunt, uncle, their children, and her grandmother. And if she did not meet her aunt's expectations,
she beat me up so many times. If I don't behave, she beat me up.
Eventually, she left Guatemala. A cousin in North Carolina offered her family money if she came to work in the U.S. Around the age of 16, she was brought to Randolph County, where she says her job was to take care of her cousin's three children. She says she slept on the floor, wasn't paid, and wasn't allowed to leave the house. Both her cousin and his wife beat her.
I was like cooking or something like that. And then he just come right after me and he'll just like kick me like really bad.
Pascual's situation kept getting worse until one night when her cousin approached her in the bathroom and sexually assaulted her.
He started coming behind me and I was like, what are you doing? And then he just started raping me in his bathroom. And then I was just screaming like really bad.
Once again, it was time to run. She says she took off barefoot in her nightgown and called the police from a neighbor's house. Her cousin was arrested and eventually convicted of rape. The federal government declared Pascual a trafficking victim and issued her a visa to stay in the United States. Nationwide, about 900 trafficking victims received visas last year. And Karika Yarborough Smith of the North Carolina Coalition Against Sexual Assault says North Carolina is among the top 10 states for human trafficking.
We've had a lot of cases of what we call domestic servitude, which is a person being brought into someone's home and they've been told that they're going to work, you know, maybe as a nanny or as a maid, but they're forced to stay there and they're not able to go out. They're not getting paid, or if they're getting paid, they're getting paid very little.
Pascual was among the fortunate ones who was able to escape, and the state placed her in a foster home. Now, North Carolina legislators are considering several proposals that they hope will prevent other people from being victimized like she was. One would toughen the penalty for human trafficking. Another would provide restitution to victims and educate teachers and others about the crime. Pascual is confident that victims can rebuild their lives like she did if they can escape from their enslavement.
They have to get out of the situation they are in now. Just find a way and get out. They are strong and they can do it.
She says that once free, survivors of human trafficking should focus on the future. That's what she's doing as she completes high school and dreams of going to college on a track scholarship. An opportunity, she hopes, to run towards something positive after a lifetime of running away. In Asheboro, I'm Mark Haywood.
And Mark is here. That piece ran on the Carolina Connection, a program produced by students at UNC Chapel Hill under the tutelage of Adam Hochberg. Four of those students are here today, along with Adam. Mark is here. So Adam challenges you to think big. A study crosses your desk about international trafficking. That's big. North Carolina number 10. Click, click. It's starting to fall into place. You have a connection with somebody right here. Click again. All of that makes you excited. And now you have to talk to a victim of rape, of slavery, modern-day slavery. How did you handle that sensitive situation of talking to a human being in that situation?
It was hard. I mean, I've never really done anything quite like that before. And, you know, I asked her, how many people have you shared to? And she said, nobody, you're the first. And that kind of shell-shocked me. And once I got over that, I just said, well, you know, I want you to be comfortable with this, you know, whatever it is we need to do. If there are things that you don't want to answer, if there are places you don't want to go, just tell me. And then as we interviewed, that was something that I had to just be conscious of as we were going through.
Did you get a sense that she how did she feel about telling the story? Was she reticent? Was she anxious to get her story out?
Well, that was the bizarre thing to me, is that when we first came to her, her foster mother said, she doesn't really want to do it. I don't think that's going to work. And then by the time that we did it a week later, she shared the whole story. It was a 3-hour interview.
Adam, when you this challenge that you put out to students who are obviously the folks focused on their grades, I mean, that's the one of the characteristics of a student. You're really kind of locally focused. How do you get students to think big and then bring it back down to a level that is at the storytelling level, the personal level?
Well, you know, one of the things, even though we produce a weekly show and the students generally are producing weekly stories, I don't give them grades on each story. And actually, that was something that when I first started teaching, I did, you know, grade every story. And what I found was that when you start making students do stories for grades, they become very safe. They want to find out what is the magic formula that's going to get me an A on this story, and everything then tries to fit into that box. And I said, I'm not going to grade you on your stories. You know, go out. If you got a big idea and you fail, that's okay. I don't want you to be afraid to take on a big story because if it fails, oh, goodness, I'm going to get an F this week. So part of it is sort of removing it from that typical pattern in college that we're doing everything for a grade. The other thing, I think, is just to challenge them. And, you know, the crew we have, I think, 7 students in the class. That's actually a pretty big news gathering group by today's standards. There are a lot of professional newsrooms in the Triangle that don't have that many people anymore.
So, sadly, that is true, yes.
Yeah, so let's use that, and we have good technical equipment, and we have, you know, a good support system, and let's go out and use it, and let's make a statement. Let's not just do little stories about, you know, what the Glee Club on campus is doing, but let's do some important things too.
And so you do those, and also those little stories right under your nose are important and can be interesting as well, and they make it onto the program that you produce every Saturday. This is Adam Hochberg's class, teaches students to make a radio show. It's another course at UNC that allows students to, there is another course that allows students to be in a rock band, and James Kaminsky reported on that story, and I want to listen to that right here.
It's 6:30 Thursday evening, and 5 UNC students are getting ready for class. But instead of plugging in their laptops, they're plugging in their amps. And it's not pens and pencils they're using, but guitar picks and drumsticks. Junior Jeff Himes is one of the guinea pigs in this new experiment from the music department, Rock Lab.
It's probably the best thing I've done in college. It's like the best class in the world. It's like you and a bunch of your peers playing music, and then giving each other feedback, positive and negative feedback, and also getting feedback from like adults who have been through this kind of thing before.
Himes plays bass in a band with 4 other students for school credit. While he's majoring in chemistry, he says this class is bringing him closer to his real passion.
Part of me feels like taking this class justifies my desire to be a rock star because I'm actually studying it in an academic setting.
John Brackett is the mastermind behind the whole thing. As professor of the class, it's his responsibility to teach them how to rock. But he sees it as something more than just shredding with your friends.
One thing that I've tried to do with this class that isn't, you know, just kind of, you know, sitting around and playing, you know, smoke on the water, you know, for 3 hours a week is introduce students to not just the performing aspect of it, but getting them to think about the business of being in this band as well.
Himes' band is currently working on Allison by Elvis Costello. Brackett intentionally chose a song that would challenge the musicians by getting them out of their comfort zone.
And so it wasn't just kind of picking our favorite songs. It was sitting around and saying, okay, here's a song. What are some of the issues that would be involved with this?
Brackett knows it's unlikely that his students will someday become rock stars, but he says that's not really the point of the class. He wants his students to learn how to work together and how to listen to one another, because that's what he says is the recipe for a successful performance.
Good band, very good. Thank you so much for all your hard work.
In Chapel Hill, I'm James Kaminsky.
There we have the, now 2 classes that don't grade, the music class and the radio. By the way, both subjects in which you can't take off for spelling because it doesn't matter. So actually grading becomes more difficult. Gene, what attracted you to that piece? What made you want
to
do it?
Well, it's a funny story, actually. I think this piece really started about 10 years ago when I first saw the movie School of Rock because I'm a musician. So when I saw that movie, I fell in love with this idea of playing music, you know, academically. Now, fast forward, here I am at school, and I find out through a friend that he's a musician too, but he's actually getting 3 credit hours for playing with his friends. And I thought, wait a second, I'm playing with my friends, and I'm doing everything I can to get my work done in time so I could have band practice late at night. And meanwhile, my friend is going to the studio, and he's getting 3 credit hours to practice. So I just thought, oh my God, I need to do a story on this. This is incredible. Meanwhile, you know, all of us are doing this kind of thing where we're working as a radio show together to put together, you know, a professional radio show. All these musicians are coming together to put together a professional band. So I just had to, you know, tell this story and share it with everyone.
I want to go around the table and I'll start with you, James, in terms of what you're learning from this and whether or not you plan to and how you would plan to turn this into a career.
I mean, I definitely feel like I've learned a lot, specifically with real life situations that come about in the class. I did a story, for example, on medical marijuana, and we had a very hard time about deciding when sources did or didn't want to reveal themselves. And there were other issues, just a lot of ethical things that came up. And I just felt like in this class, I got so much out of it that I'm going to carry on with me when I go into the real world. And hopefully, I want to be a journalist. So I feel like I've just got hands-on practice that another class wouldn't have been able to give me otherwise.
Yeah, but you spotlighted something else because you indicate that by tackling these ethical questions and other issues that come up in the course of producing a piece, you also become a better consumer, I would think. You get to, once you see how the sausage is made, you have a little better idea about how what you're going to eat and what you're not going to. Mike, tell us about what you've learned in this class.
Well, I mean, just producing the last two semesters, I think, managing, seven reporters and trying to figure out, I mean, I feel like we have a little older demographic, but we're also students, so we want to have fun with the show, but we also want to produce news. And I think just managing that, trying to figure out what's newsworthy. And yeah, absolutely, I'd love to go into radio.
How about you, Mark? Tell us about that. And I have another question for you as part of it, which is, we all talk about this. Adam mentioned it. Is there another way of storytelling? Is there another way to be more relevant to maybe a younger audience? And I just wonder what you've learned about storytelling, because it strikes me that some elements are universal and ancient, and there may be new ways. So as you think about what you've learned, how much of what you've learned tells you how to tell stories in new ways that might reach a younger audience?
Well, it's definitely been a challenge along the way, but I think I really enjoy that. I really enjoy learning how to take sound and think of innovative ways to, put it on the air and get people listening. I mean, people are always looking for a good story, like you've said, and it's really just making it relevant to young people today, whether that's taking an issue like Rock Band or taking a broader issue that's serious and then focusing in on people. Because I think when people, listeners realize that real lives are being affected by these different issues and they have powerful stories, if you can find a compelling way to tell that, that's when you start to draw people in regardless of how old they are.
Adam, you hear a lot of concerns these days about new media attracting attention or distracting attention. People aren't serious. Young people aren't taking the news seriously. What you're finding? You're sort of in the belly of the beast every day. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I think that there are young people who take the news seriously. I think that there's a lot of confusion, really, among people of all ages about where to get the most credible news. And that's something that's maybe a new element that we have to teach in journalism school. I mean, are we going to have to teach people how to tweet credibly, or are we going to have it's different than when we used to teach the inverted pyramid or the five W's or whatever. There's all these other issues out there, crowdsourcing and anonymous sources and social media, and people are still interested in the news, but it's much harder to navigate the marketplace anymore.
Kirsten, what are you learning, and how do you try to navigate that and sort of bring these two worlds together? Do you feel that's your responsibility to bring two worlds together? You're just off in that brave new world of 2013 and beyond.
I mean, I think it is, it is a new world, and I don't know that we have really been part of both of them. I think this is the world that we've grown up in. This is what we know. We've been immersed in it. But as far as what I've learned, I mean, just learning life lessons. I'm going to piggyback on what James said and just like real world lessons. It's not just about how to take notes and be a journalist and record things. It's about talking to people and like keeping up with the news, keeping up with what's going on in the world.
All very good, and what a pleasure to meet all of you. Adam Hochberg, instructor at UNC Chapel Hill in the Journalism Department. The students who produced and report for Carolina Connection are Kirsten Chang, Mike Rodriguez, Mark Haywood, and James Kaminsky. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And coming up next, what makes a bad film attractive to smart people? Stay tuned.